Everybody, welcome back to MacTax. Today we got a special guest, Corey Gaiman. How are you doing, Corey?
Great. How are you doing today, Justin?
I'm doing great. Thanks for taking the time, hopping on. Why don't you tell us, a little bit about yourself, about your firm, how you got started?
Yeah, sure thing. So I kind of always wanted to be an accountant, kind of went down that path right after high school and ended up at a small firm after college. Got my teeth cut there for about 7 years and decided to go out on my own. Started with no clients, moved back to my small hometown, and just got to work. So it's good to have a built-in network once I tried to start getting started, and grew from there. So we grew through natural growth, acquisitions. We planted new offices, and now we're up to 7 offices around Southwest Missouri.
That's awesome. And so you quit before you had any clients. You just said,
okay. That's correct. Part of the key there was moving back home with our family close. So we knew we weren't going to go hungry, but yeah, had to get to work quick.
Nice. That's awesome. And then how'd you get your first client?
I've noticed a big difference when I work in small towns versus metropolitan areas. And now we have offices in both. And I started out in Springfield, Missouri, which is a bigger small town, I like to say, 150,000 or so. So it acts that way. You get used to just telling people about yourself, walking into businesses, and it almost feels like cold calls, but you try to grow a relationship with them. You try to tell them who you are, what you're doing. Fortunately, I moved to an area that really needed it. And so they were happy to see me.
That's awesome. Yeah, I remember when I started, I was going like door to door, and it feels a little weird at first, but you get a lot of people who do value it and who are looking for an accountant. Ultimately, I feel like we're always, selling trust. So they want to be able to trust and like the person. And there's always an opportunity. Someone either doesn't have an accountant or someone's not happy with their accountant. So there's definitely always opportunity in this business. I know we were chatting a little bit, before we got on about the, running a firm. It's got to be hard finding people. I'm not sure if it's even harder in your area or if it's, mm-hmm. it's easier in your area compared to metropolitan areas. I'm in New York, Long Island. So, cost of living's a little bit higher, but, I don't know if you read the Wall Street Journal, they've had 3 or 4 articles recently about the shortage of accountants, how no one wants to be an accountant anymore, which I find surprising. Not surprising in the sense that I know a lot of people even go into accounting and they don't like the work. I'm wondering why they even went down this road, but I find the field, the work, if you like the work, it's very rewarding. You get to help people in an area where they don't understand, taxes, accounting rules. So to me, it's surprising to see that. What are your thoughts on that?
Right. And you're right. It can be a scary world for businesses in particular. It's almost like a foreign language to them on what we're doing and why we're doing it. So I even recognized that back in college. I mean, accounting 102, you would see about half the class drop out after the first semester. It just wasn't for them. And they realized it right there. But once we got into it,
we now have the class.
Exactly. Once I got into it and realized this makes sense to me, the trick is finding a way to interpret that to someone that it doesn't make sense to. I run into clients consistently that they're very good at their business. They're very good at their craft or their trade, but running the business might escape them, or just understanding that language of the money escapes them. And what we have struggled with, and you're talking about, is just finding people that want to be in this line of work. The hours are long, especially if you do tax returns. It can be very stressful and deadline driven. Lately, there's been a shortage, and you're right. I think you have to have a certain aptitude to do it, a certain desire to put in that type of work. But I also find it very rewarding. Like you say, we're helping a business succeed. I mean, our motto here is our vision is your success, and we want our clients to succeed. We want their businesses to thrive. And honestly, I try to take care of my people as best we can. We see that changing environment, less people coming into the industry. We're trying to balance the work life much better than we ever did in the past, and then that our industry has ever done, because burnout is, that's the number one killer in this industry.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And I like what you said about, you know, I always say that I feel like accounting is the code to understanding your business. Mm-hmm. You understand the financials, you understand the tax impact of a transaction. And it may sound silly to us, but somebody who makes 100 grand may say, oh, I'll go buy this piece of land. Oh, well, that's not a write-off for you. So you're paying taxes that, you know, you don't have anymore. So being able to explain these types of things to clients and, you know, educate them to make better decisions for their business while still reaching their goals. It definitely is tough with the shortage of people. Do you feel like as you've grown, another thing we're talking about, you've had a lot of, you know, success, you've grown a lot. Do you find as you've grown more, it's helped you be able to attract more talent, or has like the market been kind of offsetting that as well?
The market's been difficult to find CPAs specifically. I find that there are many people that want to become a bookkeeper. The flexibility of hours of becoming a bookkeeper or a payroll specialist or even a tax preparer that's not a CPA, that's maybe even become easier for someone to accomplish because they can train themselves online. They can even work with clients online and remotely. You got a very talented pool of people that want to or need to stay home for work, and they're able to do this job from home. CPAs in particular seems to be where the shortage is, and where I'm concerned that, you know, what's the next stage? I think since for the last 20 years, I'm sure the Wall Street Journal alluded to it, for the last 20 years, every year, fewer CPAs have come out across the country. And so we're learning to adapt our services to our clients better and to our potential personnel. So one thing you and I talked about is just that ability to work from home. I've always pushed it, but it really came to a head during COVID, right? We had to. Everybody had to figure it out. And fortunately, we were ahead of the game. We already had those remote services put in place, and we just went home and got to work. And we've tried to hone that down and iron out the wrinkles along the way and really put out a better product for our clients and a more convenient product for my employees.
It's always a fun topic of working from home. And I think we are in a different industry where it's not the norm. Like somebody can work from home and we know if they're working or not because there's a specific deliverable or task that needs to get done.
Right.
So it's, you know, and everything with us is billable hours. You got to track your time. So you know, this return took me 20 hours or I was supposed to take you 4 while we were doing the other 16. So it's really, you know, we're in a good industry that work from home can be a thing as long as, you know, everyone's responsible and professional about, you know, handling their work. And it really is a great thing. You know, most things are paperless nowadays, which is good. Our job really is, you know, definitely a great job to work from home or a hybrid model. I find if you're new to accounting, I feel like it's better to be in the office because I know me personally, I could have never learned this working from home. I need somebody to take over. Hey, here, let me drive. Let me show you.
And one thing we've done is even new employees, if they're brand new to us and we don't have that rapport built with them or that trust from a long term, we would like them to come in a little bit first or at least for some training. Get used to everybody. Let us get used to them as well and build that trust and that relationship. So when they do go home, we know they're working. They're getting a good support system behind them. And what we try to promote them to do is call in and talk to someone and don't spin your wheels too long. Let's learn as you go along here.
Yeah, I feel the same way because, you know, you got to learn by doing. I feel like it's
right.
You're never going to, you know, fully grasp taxes until you're in the software struggling and, you know, working through it. What is your thought too on the fact that, less people going into accounting because of pay? They say, oh, why would I go into accounting and make, you know, if you're in the New York area, 80 when I could go make 180 as a finance person. Do you see, you know, wages continue to tick higher now in the accounting industry? I mean, I feel like I've seen it go up at the bigger firms, which is going to have a, you know, effect on all firms. And, you know, doesn't take a genius to realize how this goes. If wages are going up and, you know, firms got to pay more, that means they got to charge their clients more. So I think right? Do you think fees are going to continue to go up for businesses and individuals as the years go on to kind of, you know, meet that demand and, you know, and pull in more CPAs to the field for people in college thinking about this?
So one thing I've recognized over the past few years, for sure, fees have gone up, big CPA firms, small firms, and non-CPA firms as well. So tax preparation agencies, including, you know, H&R Block, Jackson Hewitt, those fees have all gone up over the past couple of years. So just that service, the way our IRS and government system is set up, it requires a specialist, unless you just have one W-2. You know, they've attempted to automate and it's been difficult, and fees are just continuing to go up. What I see on the bookkeeping side and payroll side is that it seems like the employees coming out hit a fervor there for a while. And I feel like we finally hit a peak and things are kind of back to stabilized. On the CPA side, like I was alluding to earlier, it almost seems like we're continuing to be lower supply and demand is not going away. If anything, it's increasing. So for CPAs particularly, wages are continuing to raise. And I think you're right, at the big firms, that will continue fees going up. It'll continue clients of those firms considering if they really want to pay that much or if they want to shift. It's just an ever-evolving system right now. And lately, I've noticed a big divergence in, do you need to be a CPA firm or not? You know, the big CPA firms that do audits and do attest services, yeah, they have to. Many smaller firms, you know, I am a CPA firm, but many smaller ones that are emerging, they're more business consulting, and they're not a CPA firm, even though they hire CPAs. And it seems to be a divergence in the market right there.
Yeah, I think so as well. And I find there's especially less doing the attest service. So you know, depending mm-hmm. on your state requirements, you may not even need to be a CPA firm. But I do find the CPA, the certification, the license mm-hmm. always does help comfort people. Right. You know, I've had people ask, oh, like, let me see, you know, in the world of scams, everyone's like, let me see your license number. Like, right. I want to actually right. verify that you are who you say you are. And they like that, you know, level of comfort. Right.
And I believe that individual license will always have value. And I think that won't go away. I'm concerned or curious what plays out with the actual firm license itself and the divergence there. I mean, you know, like I do, peer review came into place 20 years ago and really wreaked havoc on smaller firms. And many of us got out of audit, out of review services, out of all the attest. And so at some point, are you starting to consider, do we even need this license?
I wonder if that will make them change the threshold, because mm-hmm. we're starting to see them loosen the CPA testing threshold to get more people to take it.
Right, right.
18 months to 24 months. I wonder if they'll change peer review, because if less people are doing audit, that means it's just the big firms and the fees are going to be
very expensive. They'll definitely go up. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's just a whole snowball effect. How do you see, on the topic of changing environment, how do you see AI and, you know, other emerging technologies affecting, you know, our space? I feel like mm-hmm. accounting is ripe for disruption, but no one wants to touch it because, like you said, every time they try and make things simple, it gets more complicated. Right. Whether it's like crypto on the individual side, businesses, there's never ending rules, deductions, changing laws. On the individual side, there's more than just crypto. There's green energy tax credits, and every year it just seems to get more and more complicated.
Yeah. And so AI is really, it's poised to change the game. You know, they've been toying with it for a while, even as far as mainly in bookkeeping services, I would say. And now you're starting to see it in your tax planning services as well. And sure, it could be a great thing. You know, you get a computer that scans laws and potential outcomes in seconds that takes us hours and days and weeks to do. It could be a great thing. The big concern is, are they relying on the correct material? Are they relying on what the IRS says, or are they relying on what they found on Google, you know, the AI itself? So there is some concern there about the reference that it uses, but it's not going to go away. And my point of view is we need to figure out how to utilize this, how to make it part of what we do, without fully relying on it and always having that personal check and that expert check on top of it. I think,
helping you scale, especially with the shortage of accountants. Sure. Do you think it's coming at a good time?
It really is, unfortunately, for labor force, but it was necessary. That's how history works. Suddenly there's not enough people to work. And so someone invents something that helps that. And then the wage settles down and stabilizes, and then everybody becomes on the same page again. There's always a balance that has to be approached. The lockdowns and COVID really pushed us to do some of that, pushed some innovation, pushed some, the idea of remote services. When I started back in 2014, I wanted a portal. I wanted e-signatures. I wanted all this. And here in the Midwest, at least, that was a foreign concept. These small firms, we're still struggling to get some people with emails around here. That's just part of it. But I was always pushing for that. And then COVID hit and boom, everybody had to catch up to me. And that was really cool to be prepared for it. And like I said, we just went home and got to work. We even have all of our offices share a server. So we were already doing that. And we're able to just easily work with our clients across the country right from home.
That's awesome. What has played, in addition to being like ahead on technology, it sounds like that's been a driver of you guys with your growth. You have how many offices?
Seven offices.
Are you more leaning on the advising side as well, in addition to tax prep? Has that been a driver of your growth, or what's been the main driver to get from, no clients moving back home to seven offices? Yeah.
I would say the base is that tax prep and then bookkeeping to accompany that, and some payroll service, as much as, don't necessarily want to do payroll service, but it's okay. It's part of what we offer for our clients. And our next evolution is getting more into the strategy and potentially even some fractional CFO as we really had to nail down the base. And now that I've got a good base of employees that can handle that work for me, we're moving forward to more expertise, even some specialized expertise. My recent acquisition is in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he was a oil and gas specialist. So that's very exciting to have a whole new specialty in the firm. And, he's retirement age, but he's got all this wealth of knowledge of personal experience for the last, 50 years, at least 60 years, maybe, in oil and gas. And it's a whole new market that we can jump into. Our advisor.
So many particular, oil and gas tax deductions and credits. Right. So that's an exciting area to get into. Always want to learn more about that, and even the whole farming income as well. Maybe one day down the road,
well versed in that. We are farming specialists, that's for sure.
That's around awesome. Here. Yeah, for you guys, it applies much more out there.
Yeah, about 80% of our clients probably have some sort of farm that we need to make sure it's an actual farm and advise them correctly. And you're right. Farming and oil and gas in particular have had pretty supreme lobbyists over the last couple hundred years. And so they have special rules and they have special deductions. And we're here to know those and here to help people navigate those.
That's pretty cool. That's got to be a nice niche area for you guys. I don't know. At least maybe it's because I'm in New York. I don't know many people working on farms, farm tax returns.
Yeah, it's interesting to get to know. And it's funny sometimes just talking about it, because you're talking about dead cows, 2-year-old cows, heifers, steers. I mean, things that sometimes an IRS agent calls and they don't know what they're talking about. They just know the words. but we do, and our clients do. And then we've grown up here and we understand this. This is the way of life here. So to us, it's normal.
That's actually a topic I don't even have written down here, but it's a good one. What do you... The IRS, there's so many times we're sending stuff to the IRS and we're like, there's no way the person picking this up is going to have it's so complicated.
Right.
They have such limited staff. What are your thoughts on where the IRS is right now? I mean, I know we're seeing, we focus on a lot of crypto clients here as well. Mm-hmm. We're seeing an influx of clients getting notices, particularly the CP2000 notice of.
Yeah.
Missing crypto reports, and they have these huge tax bills for all proceeds and no cost basis. you know, but it's all automated notices. It's like, and then you call up the IRS, you ask for an extension, the agent, and you may not even get through to an agent. It could be months.
You send
a response in, could be a year, and then the automatic system shoots out another notice or a delinquency. And when you mailed a response months ago, you got to keep calling and get an extension. What are your thoughts on the IRS with them scaling up, with, you know, where they're at?
Yeah. You know, I believe the automated notices are frustrating. I don't know if that's a product of AI or how their system works with that. But you get these clients and they'll get a notice, and especially if it's a bill, they're scared, and they really are. And then we can't call the IRS. We can't get a response from them. Months and months are going by, and these clients are legitimately scared and worried, even though we all believe they did the right thing, us included in them, and probably the IRS.
The IRS even knows. The agents will say, yeah, we know that this is just an absurd number, but they didn't report it. But a lot of people don't even know the reporting requirements. They don't even, you know, my wife likes to make fun of me because I always say this, but, you know, crypto is like the first question on the return, but returns are so complicated, you know, even for us professionals, a regular, you know, individual taxpayer, certainly, you know, they're going to miss things. They're going to not understand certain things. Right. It is quite complicated.
And there was such a boom with the retail investment ease of everything. And with, you know, Webull and Robinhood and just all those that popped up all of a sudden, you could suddenly buy crypto. And then you could get a card, right? And you could go spend that crypto. And they didn't realize every single time they did something, it was a transaction and had taxable consequences. We dug into crypto quite a bit as well. I know you have also. And, you know, we've been pushing people towards Zen Ledger and a few things like that to try to consolidate, try to organize their information. But sometimes they're on 6 or 8 different platforms. And so we have, you know, you got to get it from everywhere. And they don't even know. They don't know what they've done. But yeah, that goes to the IRS from the other side, and they get this CP2000, and then they get a large bill, and everybody's nervous. Then could be a year go by. So I'm with the IRS. We just need better communication with them. We need better ability to do that. Recently, we subscribed to a service, NQ maybe. We have to pay for it.
I've heard of this. You get a spot tax practitioner line.
It is really good, actually, but it's also frustrating. Why do I have to pay for a separate service? Because I think we're paying $300 a month. And I think you use, as you sit on it for minutes, you use your time up. Why should I have to pay for that just to call them and to make the system work? So that's frustrating. However, the service is great. We do get right in.
Yeah, so I wonder if they're going to crack down on that or disallow it.
I'm not sure how it even works, to be honest with you. But it has worked. So
I have heard that. I'm just happy to have a callback. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, it's funny. I was talking to someone the other day, and they got a letter back that said the IRS wanted 692 days extra to review the situation. I don't know if that just got popped out of a computer or what, but that's what it asked for. And that was really strange. So it makes you just think something's not right there. So as far as my thoughts on it, I just want it to be better, but I don't.
It really is frustrating when you can't even get through it. So, you know, a lot of people, you know, think, oh, the IRS having more agents is going to be more audits. Yes, probably, most likely. But there's a lot of people who need issues resolved can't get their issues resolved due to lack of staff as well. So it's a double-edged sword.
Can give it resolved just in, you know, in examinations, you know, in an easy, quick, hey, we need some proof on this. We send it in. That's it. You know, maybe the audits don't increase. Maybe the examinations increase, and that's not so bad.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, we use Zen Ledger. We're a tax pro through them, so it's been a good relationship with them. And you know, but it is a struggle getting everyone to get their, you know, transactions into the software. It's time consuming. There's a lot of transactions, and like you said, people don't realize, you know, every time they transact or they receive crypto as payment or use crypto as payment, all taxable events. And especially if you're a business, you know, you got to get that even more integrated with your QuickBooks. So we've been pushing a lot of clients, you know, the business clients, to check out Bitwave, which integrates directly within, you know, their, their software. But it is complicated.
Right. And then you need to charge for it. And we've done, you know, you do end up doing so much work that you really need to charge fairly for yourself. And then they feel like that's probably too much because they didn't make any money in the end of the day. There's a lot of catch 22 that goes on with that.
Yeah, that's crypto is very, unfortunately, it is expensive when you get into the thousands of transactions. And we try and, you know, the best we can, we try and get them to upload everything to Zenledger. And we say, hey, this is what it's going to cost you. You know, just telling you up front. And they say, oh, well, I didn't make that much. Well, not about making it. It's just about how much time it is to report it to the IRS correctly. There's nothing to do with, you know, gains or gains or losses.
Right. And, you know, maybe should have called and discussed with us before you got into it. That's what we always want. We want them to call us first before they make big decisions like that.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth? But these are all good points. How do you stay organized with 7 offices and managing a team? How many employees you guys got working for you? How has that been growing you as the operator, managing a team? Mm-hmm. Delegated some of that. You still find yourself in the weeds on a lot of things. Right. How has your role changed?
You know, I've been fortunate to find several good leaders, and I have leaders at each office at this point. And then we have a really good mix of, honestly, of ages, of experience levels at each office and across the board. And with us being connected the way we are remotely, we can help each other. So it really does feel like one firm with just 7 different locations. You know, you can feel like you're down the hall from each other because we use Messenger and phone calls and shared server anyway. So it's not that different than if we're all in the same building on different floors. And so the good thing is I've been able to finally start to pull out just a little bit. I don't have to do as much of the day-to-day, but I can advise my leaders. I can stay in touch with them. Sure, I do some work occasionally. Also, some actual detailed work or several tax returns that I've kept for myself just because of the relationships. But it's been fun growing that. It has taken some time because you have to have the right people. And what I've learned is we have about 45 people at this point. Developing the right culture and the right tone of the entire firm has been really important. Just a couple of weeks ago, we had a workshop where I brought everyone from every office to my hometown, to the, where the main office is. And that was a lot of fun. We got to see each other, talk to each other, and also got to kind of set a tone for how I want this firm to go. And I view that as my role now, the one that stays connected with everybody, but I'm not really managing them or directing them anymore. They're allowed and empowered to do that on their own.
That's awesome. I mean, you know, you say it's taken some time, 9 years, you know, having the Mac Tax here in full-time business, 2 years, you know, 9 years seems pretty quick from my perspective.
So, yeah. We've acquired, I think I've acquired 6 at this point. Two of those were just, you know, one, just the owner, no staff. But every time staff has come on, and that's been sometimes challenging, but always rewarding. When I can get that staff member to come in, to buy in, to become part of our team, our family, our group, whatever we want to call it, we do use those terms. And it's been an enjoyable experience to envelop people in, have them learn our culture and be part of it, and see them succeed and move forward with a kind of a new light, because they did see their predecessor or their previous boss starting to retire and starting to slow down. Well, we bring them in and we speed them up. And we go faster, and we accept new clients now instead of rejecting them. And it's cool to see the motivation that many of those employees start to have again.
That's really cool. I like that. Yeah. Do you, and I know that it must be challenging. I mean, even just getting everyone on the same tax roll. Mm-hmm. Oh, we use this one. Oh, now you gotta use this.
Yes.
It's gotta be a fun transition, but.
Right.
Definitely seems rewarding, and glad to hear that. That's
yeah, it is. And I will point out, you know, it doesn't always work out. Sometimes employees, it just wasn't a good fit. We've had to let some go, or they have decided to leave, and that's just how it works out. So it's not all sunshine and rainbows at all. It's hard work, And it's occasionally tough, and tough decisions have to be made. But you're right, just all the way down to the tax program, sometimes that's a big struggle.
I've tried to see that being almost harder than the culture at some point.
Yeah. You know, my first acquisition, I wasn't really happy with mine, and it was just me at that point. And I actually changed to his tax program because I liked it better. And since then, everyone has changed to mine. And it's it can be a struggle to teach someone that's been doing the same program for 30 years, suddenly a brand new one.
What are you guys using that you like that made you switch?
You know, we're using Drake. It's made for smaller firms. It's very inexpensive and very good customer service, though. I really don't have many reasons to switch away from it at this point. My most recent acquisition uses Lacerte. And it has handled the oil and gas better. And so we may keep it on a per return basis, but we're talking substantial difference in cost. I mean, so it's a
couple thousand. We have UltraCast, which is the smaller version of like the Go systems for smaller firms, which we are familiar with at the bigger firms, was Go systems and OneSource.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. It was I think Lacerte, he paid almost $20,000 last year for it. And I paid $2,000 for Drake and did 5,000 returns. So, I mean, it's when you're looking at dollars and cents on just that practice part of it, it's hard to tear away from it if it's not working.
Yeah. It's working. But I believe Lacerte is always a per return system, which is.
That's part of the problem. There's a base. Yeah. There's a base. And then there's a RFP or something like that, that you have to pay to e-file each one. So Drake's not like that either. Yeah.
I got a selfish question. How is your email obsession? Do you get to inbox zero every day? How do you stay organized? Me, I have like an obsession. It's got I get stressed when there's emails. In
there. Yeah.
That's not a sustainable model.
I wish I did. Maybe I get to zero once a month. I attempt it, but if I'm gone for 2 days, it's over 150. If I'm gone for three, it can get up to 400 or 500 pretty quick. So,
does that stress you out? How do you stay organized with seven offices?
You know, again, I've deferred a lot of the communication away from myself and to my managers and to my leaders. And I honestly think empowering those leaders to be able to make almost all the day-to-day decisions at their place is the biggest key. Obviously there's a lot of trust that comes with that, and you have to trust they will know when it is important enough to call you. So my inbox, clients generally don't email me directly. It turns out to be a lot of other stuff that gets flooded in there. And I try to make sure I get back to clients, or I always encourage them, just because you're right, I am still answering for all the offices at some point or another. So I encourage all clients to copy someone else at the same time. And so it's become accustomed to them that I might not reply back right away. It might be a couple of days, or maybe, you know, someone at my office does reply back instead. So, yeah, I get you, though. When I see it says 500 unread emails, I got to start clicking them and getting them done.
Well, that's good. It's good you got staff and everyone looking after the clients in that sense. I got two more questions that I definitely want to ask you. 2023 tax season, what do you think individuals should be expecting?
What should they be expecting? So from our perspective, we will have a more streamlined, efficient service for them. And I'm really excited about that. We're getting these offices to function more as one. And that will be a much quicker, faster turnaround and better system for our clients. Now, as far as what to expect from the IRS when the refunds are coming, always a crapshoot there. We're not sure. And there's honestly, hopefully, some good legislation that still might come out that gives us some things to work on. I am excited for a year where there's not a lot of change with 19, 20, 21, just all of them, something new every year, something new we had to explain. We had the stimulus credits, we had the stimulus checks, then we had the advanced child tax credit. I'm really just excited for a year where it feels much more normal. Last year was better, but I think this year is what I expect that to feel that way.
Nice. And any advice for business owners that, prior to 2023, anything you guys are talking to clients to be thinking about mm-hmm. prior to year end, that's like a, recurring, you feel like you're just a broken record saying,
One thing that's going to creep up on some of our business clients, we have some that are very profitable and they do want to buy something every year. I'm not really a proponent of that to, just go spend all of your cash to write off your taxes, spend 100,000 to save 20,000 or 15 or whatever. I always want to talk to them about it, see if they actually need it, if they're planning to buy it anyway for their process, and then let's do the timing. However, I'm sure you already know this, the bonus depreciation is moving back to 80% this year. And so we've enjoyed 100% for quite a while now on bonus depreciation. And most of my business owners don't remember or don't know the days of Section 179 where it was actually limited. So I have quite a few.
You gotta be profitable.
You have to be profitable in your activity and then in your active work as well. So that moving to 80% will affect some. That here it's a lot of farmers. And yeah, you can spend $400,000 on a combine pretty easily. And you don't need to pay for it. You can put it on credit. So not always the best move to go do that, put it on credit, expect the deduction, or you do get the deduction and you write it all off and then you sell it next year and have to recapture it. So that's going to creep up on some people. And we talk a lot about that this time of year. If you should spend that money or if you should maybe not spend it and hold on till next year or how to time those things is better.
Yeah, the bonus depreciation is where my head's been going all these fixed assets aren't going to be 100% write off. We're at 80. We're going to be dropping down to 60 even the year after. It's going to decrease quickly. But there's the 179 available if you are profitable. You can still write that off. The last question I got for you, and I'm going back to a previous topic that we were on. If someone's in college and they're listening to this, and they're a business major, not sure where they want to go, what's your 2 cents on accounting to someone in college thinking about going down this path?
Sure. So accounting, it's important in two different ways. One way that the industry is needed across the board. So to become an accountant and a CPA, you will always have a job. You can walk into any city, you can go into any region, and you can just work online if that's what your future looks like and have a job. So it's a extremely high demand job and low supply at the moment. So now is a good time to get in there. On the other hand, not everybody wants to be just an accountant, right? Let's say just an accountant. All business really needs that basis. All of my business owner clients, if they'd had one accounting class, we could understand each other better. Just one. So I know many business majors, MBAs in particular, you have to have several accounting classes, but I would encourage anyone that's interested in owning their own business ever, even if that's a photographer or a psychologist, if you're going to work for yourself and be your own business, get an accounting class in there, get the basics down, be able to understand what your tax preparer means by a P&L or a balance sheet, or what's the difference in why can't you write off your loan payments and your principal payments? A couple of those very basic things could help people understand their business better and be more profitable just in general. And it doesn't take a whole degree for that, just a couple of classes.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Pay attention in those accounting classes. It'll get you very far.
Absolutely.
Low supply, high demand is always a good formula for, earnings potential. Right. And the only thing I could add to that is it's so versatile. Like, you could work in a nonprofit as an accountant. You could open your own business.
Right.
You could be just a tax preparer in a big firm and move your way up and do great things. Be an auditor, work as a financial accountant for a big public company and get great stock options. Right. There's so many possible paths to in this field, which is...
Every entity needs it. Business, for-profit, nonprofit, governmental, every single entity, legal entity needs it somewhere or another. And even just yourself needs it. If you're going to be an investor, you need to understand it there. You need to understand it for your family.
Yeah. And they'll find out the hard way of what it works.
Right.
Well, Corey, this has been great. Thanks for taking the time.
No, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on, and I think it's gone well, and covered a lot of good ground, a lot of territory.
Yeah, we'll have to do it again soon.
I appreciate it. Hey, thanks, Justin.
You got it.